are so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, May 18th, 2018. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here in the studio today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And our control room operator, Amir Ali.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, everyone. Just want to do a quick shout out to our co-host, Sinead Sanders, who is not with us in the studio right now, but today is her birthday.
She's enjoying her birthday today. Yay. Happy birthday, Sinead.
Happy
if you're
birthday.
Somehow able to listen to this, where I think she's camping or something exciting.
Oh, okay.
Like that.
Well, maybe she'll hear
maybe
the podcast.
Maybe she's tuned in.
Right. Happy birthday, Sinead. Today is also Endangered Species Day. In a few minutes, we'll discuss how animal agriculture drives species extinction through various means, and we'll listen to a special presentation on the topic by Mike the Vegan. Our feature interview today is with Giovanna Johnson Cook, a vegan chef, veganic farmer, and food justice activist who is also the owner and co-founder of My Two Foods and Grow Where You Are. She'll be telling us all about these two incredible organizations and the work that they do in helping marginalized communities access healthy plant-based meals. That's coming up in just over half an hour, so stay tuned. But first, Amir, you had some thoughts to share with us.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, what to talk about today on our banter session today. And last night when I was looking up some stuff, I came across an article that actually just broke yesterday with an investigation being done by DXE, Direct Action Everywhere. We often hear about experimentation that happens on animals. You know, we hear about lab rats a lot and guinea pigs and monkeys even. One thing that was new to me, I know we've talked about it on Animal Voices before. I wasn't aware of that, but experimentation on dogs, specifically beagles, which unfortunately, one of the traits of beagles is the fact that they're so loyal and trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. And docile.
Yeah, very docile. And the researchers and scientists have literally taken advantage of that trait and have turned that into a means to experiment on them more easily. Mm. Some of the things that take place, and some of these details are pretty graphic. They're force-fed laundry detergents, pesticides, and industrial chemicals to the point of continuous vomiting and death. The weird part about this stuff that takes place is that it's fairly meaningless in terms of scientific value. Like, they're not really doing any studies of importance. Not that that would make it right if they were.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem to lead to any meaningful research or anything like that.
Right.
Apparently last year over 60,000 dogs were experimented on, which is a huge number that most people probably wouldn't even realize takes place at all.
Wow.
Last spring, apparently activists with Direct Action Everywhere entered a door that was ajar at the Ridgeland facility in order to investigate conditions inside.
Where is this facility? Is it in California?
It does not say in the article where it is, unfortunately, but what they found obviously horrified even the most hardened activists. One of the things that takes place is called oral gavage, which is what they do to geese in the for the production of foie gras. Is they force feed these dogs different things to, again, to no apparent means. The scientific literature from the 2015 study defines the technique as delivering a substance directly into the stomach and is frequently used to administer test compounds in research and toxicity testing. The reason this article made me, it spoke to me, I guess, is because of the stuff that comes up often, like when we talked about the dogs in Yulin, and it received nationwide indignation and people getting upset about it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yet this much worse happens to animals everywhere all the time. And again, this is a topic that we've talked about on the show a lot, but we look at other animals that aren't dogs as, you know, not as intelligent as dogs, but there's been lots of research done into other farm animals like cows and chickens and pigs that show that they are just as intelligent as dogs, if not more intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this weird sort of ignorance and delusion that takes place among the public that makes them look at other animals as lesser than, even though intellectually they might be on the same level, if not, again, on a higher level than dogs, which we all care for and love.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely more outrage when people see cruelty to dogs or cats or, you know, any.
There's a word for that. It's called speciesism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's something that many humans are guilty of, for mm-hmm. sure. And
all of us, to some extent.
Yeah, why love one and not the other? And, I mean, it doesn't even have anything to do with intellectual capacity. When I think about it, all it has to do, for me, in my heart and in my mind, is do these animals suffer?
Mm-hmm.
And do they want to live or do they want to die? They don't want to die, and that's really what it comes down to. I mean, that's a basic argument I will give anyone is... Mm-hmm. This animal didn't want to die,
yeah.
So therefore you have no right to kill him or her.
Absolutely.
And also something you'll be talking about more in your news. You said it was a specific month for chickens this month as well. What was that again?
Yes, the specific month for chickens happens to be now. May is International Respect for Chickens Month.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, again, chickens are another animal that we often look at like they're dumb or whatever. But
unless you've lived with them like
yeah,
I have.
Yeah, for sure. All of us here have obviously seen chickens in a very different capacity. But I saw this interesting article when I was looking up different farm animals that suggest that studies have found that chickens have object permanence. That means that they understand mm-hmm. when you cover something up. It's a skill that humans develop around age one.
Yeah, human babies don't have that.
Yeah.
But it's not only adult chickens that have that, even very young chicks, right? A few days old.
They're also capable of counting and basic arithmetic, even as chicks, as you were saying. They understand logic and simple reasoning, including some concepts we don't understand until we're 6 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They have some sense of time and complex social relationships, and they have distinct personalities and show one another empathy. Oh. We've often seen videos of, you know, chickens hugging little kids and things like that.
Right.
Not
yeah.
something that we expect from so chickens. But.
So if you call someone a bird brain, that's actually a compliment.
Right.
Yeah.
And have
you seen
the chicken Little Miss Sunshine on video online?
No.
It's the best video ever.
Yeah.
She can count and she knows colors and she's just like all chickens.
Right.
Because it's not like that's just a special chicken. And actually, I always say, like, it's not even just chickens. All animals are smart. And there's actually a lot of really cool videos, which comes to mind, of rats doing all kinds of amazing things.
Rats are very intelligent. Yeah, they can be trained to do
incredible
things.
But, I mean,
things.
If you're thinking, oh, a rat's intelligent, oh, a chicken's intelligent, oh, and I know an elephant is intelligent and mm-hmm. dolphins are intelligent, well, what about the rest of them?
Mm-hmm.
They're
yeah.
all the same. They're all smart, and most of them are smarter than we humans who are destroying the earth.
Yeah, and I don't know about you guys, but I do kind of see all animals the same now. Like when I do look at cow or like a dog, I don't really see much difference.
Same. Yeah. And I actually feel that I connect more with animals than when I do with humans because animals have pure souls.
Mm.
And many humans' souls are tainted. So, I mean, I would much prefer to be with animals than with humans when it really comes to it because they're just loving creatures and they don't judge you.
Mm-hmm.
They just appreciate you for who you are.
They are innocent, for sure. Yeah, going back to, speaking of rats, just going back to the issue of animal experimentation, it's kind of what you were saying before, Amira, about how people tend to get more outraged about things like, you know, dogs being experimented on. But, thousands and thousands, probably millions of rats each year are experimented on as well, and mice as well, and people don't tend to think about that as
and
much.
Especially even
as much.
Here at the University of British Columbia, they have a big rat breeding program here, and they experiment mm-hmm. on hundreds of thousands of small rodents every year.
Yeah.
And we've done shows on that. Just take a look at our website, animalvoices.org, enter in rats. And I recommend listening to the rat appreciation show from last year when I learned to really love and appreciate rats because we had one in the studio and I was forced to really engage with this rat and learn who she was as a person.
They're pretty amazing, actually. I used to be really afraid of them. And then a friend has a rat as a companion animal, and I met this little creature, and they're actually very cute. They're very cuddly and, you know, extremely intelligent.
They are cute.
Yeah, very, very sweet little animals. But I mean, it's not to minimize the severity of beagles being experimented on. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible thing.
All animals matter.
But, yeah, exactly. They all
And you have the capacity in your heart to care for all animals. Again, it's not a matter of why love one but not the other. We can love all of them.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
We have the human heart is an expanding muscle, and we have the capacity to not just care about humans but for all animals as well. So
and
try it.
For anyone listening, if you do want to take a look at that article in more details, it's at theintercept.com.
Post it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we can post it on the Facebook page. Yeah.
Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So there's so many events happening coming up, and I want to talk about some of them. First of all, did you know that, again, this weekend, it's the Cloverdale Rodeo happening in Surrey. It opens this weekend. And so a local activist has organized a demonstration, a protest to take place on this day, which we often have every year because the rodeo is just really cruel. And we've done some shows on the rodeo before. Check them out on our website. Anyways, if you're interested in this event that's taking place, not the rodeo itself, but the demo that's happening outside of it. So it's Sunday, May 20th. Starting at 1 p.m., it's going to go all day, and they're calling it Say No to the Cloverdale Rodeo. It's happening most likely, I believe it'll be on the outskirts, like on the entrance of the Cloverdale Fairgrounds in Surrey. And, yeah, all over the world, rodeos are being closed down because people are attending them less. They're seeing how wrong it is, and more people are seeing that animals are not for entertainment, so it's not happened quite yet at the Cloverdale Rodeo. We still need to get there.
There's so much cruelty. I mean, there's been many demos at Cloverdale Rodeo over the years.
Yeah,
right?
I've done a lot of research on rodeos for past shows we've done. Like, it's a horrific thing. And again, look on our website for more info on that. Mm-hmm. So something exciting that's happening next week. If you're a free spirit and you just want to head down to California, come and join me and 1,200 other people and lots of people from Vancouver as well. So are you too into it? So May 22nd to May 29th is the Animal Liberation Conference that's being co-hosted by Direct Action Everywhere, who we were just talking about, the SAVE Movement, and Anonymous for the Voiceless, another organization. So this is going to be an event where people are going to merge together to gain activist skills, and we're going to learn all sorts of things like animal care and open rescue. There's going to be a huge cube of truth, or more likely many cubes of truth, and learning how to exercise like those skills and learn how to engage in those types of activities. And we're going to have a huge animal liberation march in San Francisco next week with over 1,000 people.
Wow.
So watch for me on the news. It's going to be great. Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
For those who don't know, a cube of truth is a type of action done by Anonymous for the Voiceless primarily, right? And it's where they don mask and hold up
laptops.
Laptops and tablets and stuff, and show slaughterhouse footage, kind of stand in a circle with their backs inside the circle and in public places.
Yeah. So we have people who engage with the people watching and engage in conversation. I was doing that in Hawaii last year, actually.
Cool.
It was really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think there's one coming up soon in Vancouver. We do have them. Okay. So if you're not going to the Animal Liberation Conference, you're missing out. However, I'm going to be missing out on next week's Veg Expo here in Vancouver, Sunday, May 27th. I highly encourage you to go. Like, I went there last year. I was there on my own, and I just spent like the whole day, like 6 hours walking around and talking to people. And if you want to find actually like new and amazing vegan foods that are actually about to sprout up in Vancouver or have just made their debut, that is the place to go. There was so much happening there. This Veg Expo has really blossomed from when it first started several years ago. It's such a great deal. And I see, speaking of deals, on Social Shopper, they're offering like 2-for-1. So it's like $7.50 or something for a ticket. It's so worth it. So it's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. next Sunday at Canada Place. And then finally, there's so much happening. Okay, yeah. So this is the last one I'm going to talk about is June 9th, another event not to miss, is the March to Close All Slaughterhouses, happening worldwide around this time, but also in Vancouver on this day. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you come to that. We have last time I checked, there was about 400 people signed up to go, and that's how many people we had last year, actually. I've been going to these marches since their inception, when we were having marches for Farm Sanctuary, basically same thing, like marches for farmed animals, and we went from, like, maybe 60 to 100 people, and then one year there was 200 people, and then suddenly, last year, it was, like, 400 people, and we are going to have at least that many people there as well this year, taking over the streets of downtown Vancouver to be loud and be a voice for the animals. That's starting at 12 p.m., 12 to 4. It's a big event. I think there will be some speakers there, too. And that's at the Vancouver Art Gallery. If you want more information, I will actually post the event info on our Facebook page this weekend, but you can also go to their website at vmtcas.org or just go to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and we'll see you there on June the 9th. So if you have any events that you would like to have announced on the show, please send them to our email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post them on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Awesome. Thank you, Allison. So now we're going to play a clip for you. This is from YouTuber Mike the Vegan.
I'm Mike the Vegan, and in this episode, the sixth mass extinction. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody knows it's caused by humans, but we're all ignoring what we're actually doing to cause it. So we're going to go around the world and look at what's actually killing all of our little furry and slimy and feathered and various shelled friends. Depending on the source, you'll hear that we're currently experiencing an extinction rate anywhere between 15 to 1,000 times faster than normal. Most people say it's about 100 times faster than normal. It's on par with previous mass extinctions caused by asteroids. The only difference is, this time, we're the asteroid. But everybody is conveniently ignoring what's actually killing the most species, and that is animal agriculture and fishing. Both of them are solely driven by our obsession with meat and other animal products. Now, before you bury that statement deep inside, run off, have a hamburger, and some fish fries, let's go into how this actually happens. You need to look no further than the hotbed of biodiversity on Earth, which is the tropics. 50 to 90% of all species live in the tropics. And if you're looking on land, that means the rainforests. To emphasize the biodiversity of rainforests, if you look in the Andes, you can measure 1,000 different species of trees within a few hundred feet. In contrast, if you go up to the Canadian boreal forest, you can only find 20 species of trees. Also, back in the 80s, when scientists were looking around Panama, they found 1,200 species of beetle around just 19 trees. But now, with our current rate of mass extinction, we're losing 137 plants, insects, and animals every single day from rainforest destruction. We know we've been destroying rainforests for a long time. The problem is our conditioned minds immediately go right to illegal logging and just logging in general for rainforest destruction. But in reality, animal agriculture is responsible for up to 91% of rainforest destruction. Logging comes in around 3%. So with that figure, we lose about 125 species per day just from animal agriculture destroying rainforests. So looking at the broader picture and doing a little bit of math, we can figure that animal agriculture is responsible for about 40 to 82% of all land extinctions just because of the rainforest alone. What about the remaining land extinctions? Well, there's some other drivers like desertification. Here is a worldwide map of desertification showing our hotspots where things are at risk of desertification in red. There are many factors in desertification, like the changing rain patterns, but again, animal agriculture takes that dry, crumbling cake on this one. Here's a chart of UN data showing what actually causes desertification. The red line is overgrazing, the blue line represents crops, which includes animal feed, and the green line is deforestation, which we just talked about. So again, driven by animal agriculture. Moving on, it turns out a large portion of the extinctions are happening where we can't even see them in the ocean. This time, however, it's our fish habit. It turns out, according to the UN, that we've exploited 3/4 of our fisheries, which results in 87% of fish species being either exploited or entirely collapsed. This time-lapse map represents fishing pressures over the last half century, going from blue to red, where red is where the most intense pressure is being put on fish population. But when looking at the ocean, it's important to note that coral reefs are a bit like rainforests in the sense that they hold 25% of all marine life and are really biodiverse. But 55% of coral reefs are currently threatened by overfishing and just bad fishing practices. Moving on to the rest of the ocean, practices like trawling and general overfishing have led to species collapse. If you look at this graph of the cod, you can clearly see what happened. Also, the short-nosed herring has seen a 98% population decrease after we destroyed its nursery habitats, and the Pacific herring has seen a 90 to 95% population decrease just from general overfishing. And the list goes on. And there are many reasons to stop eating fish. Quick tangent time. Here's a study showing that women that ate more fish during their pregnancy gave birth to babies with smaller brains. In another study using MRI brain scans, mercury and PCBs in children with mothers that ate a high seafood diet were shown to have strange brain responses to light stimulus and finger tapping. When you tapped on their left or right finger, their brains seemed to be overstimulated in a strange pattern. It's kind of like they were mixing around left and right. They were mixing it up. But hey, at least they got their protein, right? All right, back on subject. So what else is causing ocean extinction? Well, that brings me to a topic that I've hardly mentioned until now, global warming. Just so happens that about 1/3 of our carbon dioxide emissions ends up in the ocean. And this creates carbonic acid, which makes it hard for little sea creatures to form their shells. In fact, in the Great Dying, a mass extinction over 200 million years ago, it's estimated that ocean acidification wiped out 96% of the ocean's species. This brings me back to coral. Turns out that carbonic acid also makes it harder for coral to form. This is called bleaching, which is responsible for 27% of coral reef destruction. This, in combination with overfishing, is why we've lost 80% of our Caribbean coral and 50% of our Indonesian/Pacific coral reefs. And don't even get me started on dead zones, which are primarily caused by animal agriculture. If you want to read about that, links below. The impacts of global warming on extinction are vast and hard to quantify. But how does animal agriculture have anything to do with global warming? Does it? Because of the bias of various scientists, it could be responsible from anywhere between 2.8% of greenhouse gases, according to the Mead Institute. Really? You couldn't have made it a little bit more realistic? All the way up to World Watch's 51% figure. So let's just go with the FAO's 17% figure as somewhere in the middle. So animal agriculture is responsible for a sizable slice of ocean acidification, rising temperatures in general, changing of rain and flood patterns, and just general habitat destruction, all of which lead to extinctions. So in conclusion, our meat habit contributes to extinction through destruction of rainforests, desertification, and just a general contribution to global warming, which is also driving extinctions in coral reef habitats. And finally, overfishing is pushing 87% of fish species toward extinction. So what should you do? How can you help slow the sixth mass extinction? Well, stop eating animal products. And you guessed it, go vegan. Thank you for watching.
So once again, that was YouTuber Mike the Vegan. We will post that video on our website this weekend just so you can see some of those visuals that he used, some of those graphs and charts. So I admittedly am not always the biggest fan of Mike the Vegan's videos, but I chose this one because it is relevant to our show today for Endangered Species Day. Mm-hmm. Again, today is Endangered Species Day. And I thought there was a lot of good information in there, a lot of really interesting kind of staggering stats and facts. It's such a big topic and such a complex topic, you know, species conservation. And we actually just did a show for Earth Day last month. Earth Day, I think, was April
23rd.
Oh, 20. Somewhere
third
around there.
The
yeah.
show was on the 20th.
Oh, right.
So 22nd.
Okay.
It was 22nd.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And I was just thinking about how
these two days or these two concepts really tie into one another, because as he was alluding to in the video there, so much of species extinction has to do with environmental destruction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the just habitat loss for these animals and
ocean destruction too.
Exactly,
that I was surprised. This is something new for me to learn.
Right. You know? Yeah. These dead zones and pollution and that kind of thing, global warming, you know, that the temperatures rise and that just affects the balance of everything in so many of these habitats, and some species just can't survive if stuff like that happens. And so it's so important, I think, to think about, you know, if we are concerned with conserving endangered species, then we have to be concerned with destruction of the environment, and vice versa. They're just inextricably linked.
And what's destroying the environment, at least?
Is animal agriculture, is a major driver of it, absolutely, of all aspects of environmental destruction, global warming, water pollution, air pollution, ocean dead zones, etc.
And destroying the rainforest, because we're chopping down, it says 91% of the rainforest for animal agriculture,
right.
And that's to grow food for the animals to eat.
Yes, yeah, grains and soybeans, and in some cases also to make room for feedlots and that kind of thing for cattle. It's a staggering thing. And again, one of the most basic things we can do to help is to go vegan, take animal products off our plates, out of our lives to the fullest extent possible.
And it's basically about living low on the food chain, right?
Right.
Because when we take up all these resources, it actually extends to the rest of the earth.
Right.
Some people think that things are not inextricably linked, and they are. And this little audio clip that we just played really went into a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So shocker for people who didn't know.
Yeah.
us vegans here, I mean, it was shocking for me a bit, but for people who are consuming animal products, come on, you have to step up and be a steward of this earth in order to live here, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't just use and abuse our resources on earth and expect that it's going to be okay.
Right.
A lot of people are having a lot of kids. If you want to see a future for your children and your descendants from there, you have to be the one showing by example the kind of world that you want to live in, so that there is a world for your children and your grandchildren to live in.
Yeah, that's true. And it's kind of, you know, people have been talking about this for many, many years, many decades, but it's sort of getting down to the wire now. We're kind of you know, almost getting past the point of no return.
David Suzuki says we have passed the point of no return.
Yeah, some scientists do say
and
that.
And he's a smart guy. So, I mean, when I hear him say that, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and he's not the only one. I've read of other scientists saying that too. So
I feel like there's some danger in saying that too, because I think a lot of the people that are supporters of the practices that are causing the destruction and stuff think or hear those things, I'm like, oh, okay, we're screwed anyway, so let's just keep doing it.
And it's a cycle, right? They're the ones causing the problem. Don't be part of the problem, be part of the solution.
Exactly. At the very least, the process can be slowed down. There's, you know, ways that we can ameliorate the impacts that we have, absolutely.
I think you did touch on the key there, though. Like, it's kind of a cliche thing to say, will anyone think of the children? But it doesn't seem like people are thinking of the children.
Right.
Because if they were, then I think that is enough of a reason to change practices if people care about their kids.
Yeah, I'm appealing to people who like to have lots of kids and want to pass down their genes and that. Okay, so you're going to do that, but you have to make sure that you are participating in having an earth that will sustain that population.
Right.
By the way, the world is overpopulated, if you didn't know.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I mean, scientists have been saying that within 50 years, there's going to be no fish in the ocean, for example. And, you know, so it's kind of, that's,
well, they've always said 2048. So that's actually less than 50 years now.
Yeah,
it used to be 50 years, and now it's still 2048. Our oceans are going to be dead.
Yeah.
And as that little audio clip said, that that this has exploited 3/4 of the fisheries and it has affected, I think it said 87% of fish have been exploited or are on their way to extinction.
Right, exactly.
I've actually heard some people say that the best thing to do for fish in the ocean is to eat more fish. I think somebody on our show that said that once, I think, and I just shook my head. How could you say that when the evidence is clearly showing otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the easiest things we can do is to just remove our contributions to that. Obviously, there's many things you know, that individuals can do. You can donate to charities that are working on these issues. You can lobby your members of parliament, your congresspeople, vote for people who are going to be taking action on climate issues and species conservation.
And vote with your dollar and your consumption choices.
Yes, exactly.
Because we can all do that, right?
And that's one of the most effective
things. We all have that power.
Right. Yeah, it's one of the things that individuals can do that makes the greatest impact. That's kind of the takeaway from that. And I think that, you know, sometimes people say things like, oh, well, you know, if a species is going to die out, it's going to die out. What's the big deal? You know, but I think that...
What if it's the human species that dies out?
And it may very well be, absolutely. I think that... so many different animals, they live in these complex ecosystems, and each one of them plays an essential role. And I think we can't be so flippant about some of them dying out. It really throws a lot of things out of balance when they do. And, you know, and they deserve a shot. It's kind of just a terrible injustice that humans are causing so much destruction that it's killing off entire species. And that alone, I think, is reason enough for us to try to stop that and do whatever we can to make it better.
So you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, on the Coast Salish territories. So I have some news to share. Speaking of species dying out and being unnecessarily killed, we have the BC government is actually opening a public engagement period right now to help end experimental wolf kills. And so this is happening in BC and Alberta. We've covered it on the show a few times before if you want to check that out on our website. Mm-hmm. And it's encouraging to know that they are opening this engagement period because these experimental kills are to supposedly control caribou, to conserve caribou populations. And we have shown on the show before during our interviews that this actually is not helping to recover caribou populations. So they're taking in commentary now. So predator kill programs are ethically unacceptable, outdated, and ineffective as a long-term solution to caribou declines. So as I speak, caribou habitat is still being destroyed. It's time to abandon wolf killing programs and preserve intact ecological systems. So you can make a comment if you want to the BC government. This engagement period ends on June the 15th, and you can email caribou.recovery@gov.bc.ca. And I'm going to post a link on our Facebook page today to give you more info about how you can also comment. There's a comment form there that the group Wolf Awareness has put out. So also just become educated on these issues. And like I've said, we've done a couple of good interviews about this in the past. Check them out on our website, animalvoices.org. So as we are talking about, it's International Respect for Chickens Month. And the main news story that I wanted to share today has to do with chickens. So this is regarding a video that was recently released, an undercover video released by the animal protection group Mercy for Animals. They've released and done many undercover investigations, many of which we've featured on the show. And the Ontario SPCA is now reviewing graphic new footage that shows staff at a hatchery in southern Ontario injuring and killing baby chickens by hand. So, Elise, you had a look at this two-minute video, and people mm-hmm. can see it at maplelodgeharms.ca, I believe. So it shows the employees rough handling these chicks. They're tossing them into a macerator. That is a macerator, mm-hmm. like a blender, to be ground up alive. It shows them snapping their necks and beheading them against sharp edges. Mm-hmm. This video was released on May the 9th by the animal advocacy group Mercy for Animals, as I said, and they say the film was recorded between December 20th and December 2017 and February 2018 at Fleming Chicks Limited in Ontario, which is owned by Maple Lodge Farms, a Canadian meat processor based in Ontario. So if that name sounds familiar, it may be because they have previously been convicted of cruelty towards chickens, which has made the national news. They were fined in 2013 $80,000 for two counts of failing to transport chickens humanely after 2,000 of its birds froze to death on their way to slaughter. water, and this happened again 2 years later. They're also fined $6,000 for the same thing. Wow. But on their website, they say Maple Lodge Farms is committed to the respectful, humane treatment of chickens during all phases of rearing, transportation, and slaughter. Mm-hmm. Treating the birds humanely that we rely on for our livelihood is a priority and is a moral responsibility that we take seriously. So, is it humane to macerate day-old chicks and snap their necks and behead them? Actually, you can look at the undercover video yourself to our listeners online at maplelodgeharms.ca. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this is all legal. So Anna Pippis, she's the director of Farmed Animal Advocacy for Animal Justice. She's seen this video. She's commented on it. She says that while the treatment of the chicks in the video may be unethical, it doesn't strike her as technically illegal under any federal or provincial law. She says there's no doubt that existing regulation on the handling and euthanasia of chicks could be more enforced more progressively in factory farms and hatcheries across the country. But when it all comes down to it, this is all legal stuff. Mm-hmm. I applaud Mercy for Animals for bringing it out into the light, because what may be legal is not necessarily ethical, and Absolutely. It's us consumers who have the power to change that.
Right.
So go to maplelodgeharms.ca to find out more about that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Allison. So moving on, my guest today is Giovanna Johnson-Cook, a veganic farmer, vegan chef, and food justice activist based in Atlanta, Georgia. Giovanna is the owner and co-founder of My Two Foods and of Grow Where You Are. Hello, Giovanna, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
For sure, thanks for being here. So first of all, can you tell us what is My Two Foods and what kind of work do you do with this project?
My Two Foods is a food-based delivery service. That's our main thing, but we're also a food educational service as well. So we have programs like our vegan lunch program, which serves mostly inner-city kids in, I guess you could say, neighborhoods that are blighted, that are disenfranchised, that are low-wage environments. We serve them vegan lunches, a plant-based meal, as well as we have a food delivery service just for our regular clientele, and then we have a food delivery service for pregnant and postpartum mothers. That's all plant-based. It's kind of hard to say what we do because we do so much under both of our umbrellas, but our main thing is our food programs where we serve plant-based meals to different people in the community.
That's beautiful. So for the school lunch program, do you kind of set that up with the schools? You make an arrangement and then you go in at lunchtime and serve them vegan school lunches?
Basically. So, yeah, schools reach out to us that are interested or that have heard about us through word of mouth. And we come through and we set up programs where we just deliver lunch every single day for the kids that's plant-based. And My Two Foods actually handles all of the menu planning and things like that. And we just let the schools know what's going to be on the menu. And they've been so far pretty open to it over the last few years. So it's been a really great success.
That's awesome. So the My Two Foods website states that your overall mission is to, quote, honor the art of food rituals and to serve humanity in a way that promotes the least harm and the most good for people, animals, and the environment, which I find so beautiful and inspiring. Can you elaborate on the concept of honoring food rituals?
Well, when I think about food rituals, I just think about, how we have food has such a central role in society and within different cultures, and just honoring the reverence that we have for the bounty of nature and for our relationship with Mother Earth and how we receive so much of our sustenance from that. So honoring that ritual and those rituals that have gone back throughout time where people actually honor the earth, honor nature for providing us with sustenance, for providing us with nutrients and providing us with the foods that we eat.
Absolutely. So can you tell us, what is veganic farming and how does that work?
Veganic farming, it's you're bringing vegan and organic together. And so it's a farming method that utilizes no animal inputs. So that includes like no fertilizers from animals at all. And we grow with green manure. So it's also a system that's based on permaculture. So we utilize what's in the environment that we're already in. So we try our best to work with nature and use just whatever we grow, what's left over from that, or what's after it's run through its cycle, we reuse that to replenish the next generation of crops. So it's just working with the cycles of life, working with the cycles of nature, and doing the least harm that we can when we are growing food in any given environment.
Cool. So, just for our listeners, can you tell us what is green manure?
Green manure is basically when you have, it's kind of like compost. And it's basically that's what it is, actually. It is actually compost. So taking, food scraps or leftover foods from, crops and just allowing that to decompost and then using that to feed the next generation of plants and using that to feed the soil as well. It all breaks down in nature. So once it breaks down, we utilize that because it turns into soil and utilize that soil to then feed the fields and feed the new seedlings to grow more plants.
Right. So what would you say are some of the benefits to veganic farming versus conventional or even normal or whatever, regular organic farming?
Wow. I think the main one is that we work with the cycles of nature. We actually work with nature as opposed to working against it, which is what we find in conventional farming. With us, the premise is to cause the least harm. So actually really just watching nature to get our cues for how she does things. And I call nature she because I think of it as, a great mother. But, in any way that you think of nature, just looking at how nature grows and then it goes through its cycle of decay and death, but it's all within a certain kind of balance. So understanding that balance and working with that balance as opposed to working against it, understanding life cycles, understanding how the earth nourishes itself, and it's just a system of regulations and checks and balances that we mimic from nature in all of our practices when we farm.
Cool. Do you find that there are any challenges to veganic farming that you might not encounter in other farming methods?
I think the only challenge is just understanding that, it's not predictable, mm-hmm. It's a challenge, but I think that's just life, mm-hmm. So it's just being able to go with the flow, to understand that sometimes you may get a great crop, they may get a good harvest. Sometimes you may not, depending on the seasons, depending on, soil conditions. It could go either way. And just being able to trust in that whole process and to be able, again, to trust nature and, to know that somehow, some way, the earth knows what it's doing and to be able to trust that. I think a lot of times as humans, we have this kind of control thing going on. So I think that would be the only challenge is realizing that. And there are some spaces in life where we are absolutely not in control, and it's okay to kind of just go with the flow and allow, things to flow as they're going to.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about Grow Where You Are.
Wow. Grow Where You Are is a collective of farmers, also a collective of chefs, and food artisans, and it keeps growing and growing and growing, but it's basically our collective of farmers, and we concentrate a lot on food justice, on working with farmers to empower farmers, and also doing work in the community to allow people to understand that they can have food sovereignty, that they can have the ability to grow their own food and have a say in what foods come into their community and into their bodies.
Excellent. So I understand that you do workshops with people on veganic agriculture?
Yes. Over the years, we've been doing this for about 15 years now. We have workshops where people come out they volunteer and they come out and they learn farming methods. We also have programs where we have chefs that come out who want to get, more in touch with the food that they're utilizing in their kitchens. And so they come out and they train with us. We work with children. We have children summer programs and after-school programs where we teach children the art of eating, a plant-based diet, but also the art of farming as well, and teaching them how to, if they choose to utilize these skills to one day, if not have a career in it, but to just be able to sustain themselves and to, sustain their families.
Amazing. So how long have you been vegan, and what brought you to a vegan lifestyle?
Wow. I'm going to age myself. I've been vegan, if it's 2018 now, it's been about, 17 years.
Wow.
I've been vegan. And it's funny. I was, we were growing up in high school, was a time period where a lot of music was coming about out about, like, in hip-hop about how we ate. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, like, Dead Prez talked about having, a vegan diet. I remember Erykah Badu would talk about it a lot. But also I have a really good friend who, he read a book called Healing with Whole Foods. When we were, like, we were young kids. We had to be in high school. And he just called me one day, and he was like, look, we have to stop eating this way. It's not good for our bodies.
Wow.
And he was such a big inspiration in my life. So I just said, okay, well, if you do it, then I'll do it. And so at like around like, yeah, when I was in high school, I came to my mom and said, I'm not eating any animals anymore. And I'm not going to be eating any dairy or eggs. And of course she thought that I was absolutely insane,
right.
But she was like, I don't know what you're going to eat then because I cook everything. But actually, after some time, she actually, you know, accommodated me. So I'm thankful for that. So, yeah, it's been a journey. But it all started really with just the culture of the time and just being informed about different ways of living, you know, at a young age, that we didn't have to continue eating the way we were eating.
Right. Very cool. So what does food justice look like to you?
Wow, that's a big one. I think food justice runs kind of like hand in hand with just justice, period. You know, people having the sovereign right to be able to live, really, to be able to have a say in what it is that they are putting into their bodies, to be well-informed, to have access to good and healthy foods, and to have access to the information about, you know, what we eat and how that affects not only ourselves, but the planet. There's so many layers to food justice, but I really think it's people really just being informed and, excuse me, having the opportunities to just make sound choices based off of, you know, truthful information.
Absolutely. So what are some things that everyday people can do to work towards achieving food justice and to help marginalized communities to access more nourishing foods?
Wow. I think really it starts with, because we're such a consumer-based society, it's really where we put our money and where we put our attention. I think that says a lot, especially for the everyday person, you know, what we consume and how we consume, and not only just as far as food, but information, and then how we share it, and just being open to new ideas, being open to new experiences. I think a lot has happened with, like, a lot of the movies that have been coming out about plant-based diets. A lot of, you know, now there being a lot more options that people can have when they go to the grocery store. They have options on, you know, meat alternatives and things like that. I think that says, you know, a lot, and it helps a lot. But I think really just on a day-to-day basis, just, you know, keeping ourselves informed and just being open to new ideas and new experiences, which are really not new, but, you know, to some people that, you know, they are.
Absolutely. Just going back to some of the work that you're doing with My Two Foods and everything, I was thinking about how on your website it mentions that you make an effort to ensure that the meals that you serve are culturally appropriate. And I'm assuming that means that you probably work with a number of different communities, right? And make an effort to serve foods that might be familiar to them, familiar flavors and that sort of thing. And am I right about that? Is that what you mean by?
Yes. Initially, we were mostly within a community of color. So mm-hmm. we wanted to be mindful of just, I mean, because traditionally, especially I'm in the southern United States, especially mm-hmm. the South, the diet is so heavy, and traditionally it's been so heavy with animal, I hate to say animal products, because it just sounds so horrible to say that,
yeah.
But, but with, you know, what people know as, like, animal products is, you know, they're heavy meat eaters, heavy dairy consumers, and we wanted to make sure that the foods that we were transitioning people into or introducing people to were familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of alternatives to things. So, but that were things that are culturally sound, but we also did our best to pull back from, like, old traditions or from cultures around the world that we were experiencing that were plant-based as well.
Mm-hmm.
and also keeping in tradition with the things that grow within a certain area, mm-hmm. because those are also, you know, they have their own cultural history. And so just keeping in mind, like, again, going back to the idea of food rituals, but just keeping in mind, like, what people eat within a certain area, what they've traditionally ate, and doing our best to accommodate those different tastes and different preferences, but from a vegan approach. And we also do a lot of things that we work within an international community. Mm-hmm. Because of the work that we do, we meet so many people from different places. And so when we're constantly in training, we don't only train people, but we're also training ourselves. So we've had experiences with different chefs from different backgrounds. And so whenever we come in contact with someone that's, you know, from a different background than us, it's, you know, I feel like it's our duty to have an exchange of information, of cultural information, whether that's through training under a chef from a different cultural tradition and learning those dishes, so that if we're in those communities, or if we are even introducing a new kind of cuisine to our own community, that we're informed, you know, not from this kind of like generic place, but we're, you know, we're doing our best to be as authentic as possible, because we want to honor, you know, the differences in culture within our society, and, you know, give people, again, things that are familiar, give people things that are comforting and that remind them of just who they are and where they come from, because we think in that way, you know, it's a bit easier to, you know, move forward with the conversation and with the ideas of moving towards a plant-based, you know, diet and plant-based living.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes so much sense to me. It's a great approach. So to finish up, how can our listeners support the work that you're doing with Grow Where You Are and My Two Foods?
If you just contact us through either mytwofoods.com or growwhereyouare.farm, we also have a Patreon site where we allow people to have access to some of the things that we're doing, whether it's workshops or some of our written materials, videos or like how-tos, books and things. We have a Patreon account under Grow Where You Are, and people can support us that way. Or the biggest support, if you are local, is really just coming and getting your hands dirty, or coming to visit us at our Veganic Agriculture Center, and, you know, coming and volunteering and being a part of our programs. I mean, more than the biggest resource that we need is humans, you know, and mm-hmm. we need the aid of, you know, human participation, because that's what helps all of this stuff go. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Animal Voices today, Giovanna, and for all of your wonderful
work. Thank
you
for having me.
Absolutely. It's been great.
I really appreciate being here.
Awesome. Thank you. We've been speaking with Giovanna Johnson-Cook of Grow Where You Are and My Two Foods. If you'd like to learn more about either of these organizations or to support the work they're doing, visit growwhereyouare.farm and My Two Foods, that's M-A-I-T-U, foods.com.
Yeah, that was super fascinating. I wish there was people that did more stuff like that locally here, because I don't really
Absolutely.
See that kind of thing happening.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Veganic farming is still kind of a new thing in a way, or it's being done by a few people in various places, but not many people.
Where was she located again?
In Atlanta. Yeah. Okay. So Atlanta area. Yeah. So that was very special. Absolutely. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, May 25th at noon. Next week's show will feature an interview with Karen Davis of United Poultry Concerns on the ethics of keeping backyard hens. Correct?
That's right, and it's going to be a specially themed show for International Respect for Chickens Month, because I love chickens, and we'll also be having an interview with Seattle-based animal advocate Heather Boland, who she'll be on the show to share her story about rescuing a rooster who she named Eddie. She found him while hiking the Appalachian Trail in the eastern United States, and
wow.
If it sounds familiar, it might be because you saw this story on the Dodo. Well, she'll be getting more into this, and it's just a wonderful and heartwarming story and a great way to really show respect and appreciation for chickens, and with the backyard chicken egg issue as well. It's something we haven't covered on the show before, and I think that it's definitely time, International Respect for Chickens Month, and this interview is so informative. I've already done it, and it'll just really answer all the questions and maybe ask ethical quandaries and concerns that you've had, like what is the harm of eating eggs from chickens who are raised in the backyard and being treated well? What is the harm? Well, we'll find out next week, so tune in.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's next Friday, May 25th at noon right here on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver, and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And now we'll leave you with the song. Here's Esperanza Spalding featuring Lala Hathaway with Endangered Species. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Thank you.